With all the information readily available to people today, especially the millions of American kids that carry around with them a virtual library on their smartphones, why is it that some are calling this the dumbest generation? Well, today, we'll continue our conversation about the many minds that have been and are being diverted, distracted, and devoured. Next on Licensed to Parent. Hello and welcome to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential treatment facility for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta. Our host is the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill, Trace Embry, and I'm Rich Rosel. And Trace, this is part two of a conversation that began last week with Mark Bauerlein about his book, The Dumbest Generation, How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future. And as I said then, I love the subtitle, Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. That is quite a title, but this is really key and core to a lot of the work that you guys do with teens each week here at Shepherd's Hill, isn't it?
No doubt, Rich. I mean, this Shepherd's Hill here could be a proving ground for the things that he's talking about. And the good news is, because of the plasticity of the brain, that a lot of these things lost due to digital technology, and I'm talking about critical thinking skills, creative thinking skills. These things will rebuild. They can get these things back. And so that should be an encouragement to those who are listening to the broadcast today.
Indeed. Well, Mark Bauerlein is back with us now. And Mark, last time we began talking about the importance of an educated electorate to vote in good leaders and to keep leadership accountable. And it's not only a knowledge issue, but it is a moral issue. For instance, the separation of church and state issue that's been flipped 180 degrees from its originally intended purpose.
Who would have thought that one line in a letter from Thomas Jefferson would have risen to the status of probably one of the most powerful civic axioms in our nation right now? Certainly Ben Franklin said during the constitutional deliberations that no nation can survive that is not grounded in God.
One of the least, arguably the least religious founding father. Between him and Jefferson. Absolutely incredible. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that it was true that you couldn't hold public office unless you were a member in good standing of a church back then, that the separation of church and state was not to keep the church out of the state, but to keep the state out of the church.
Exactly. They were worried about the reverse that people are worried about now. They didn't want politics interfering with churches.
But
they weren't worried about churches interfering with politics.
Right. But this dumbest generation doesn't realize that. They've bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, nor do their parents' generation. Let's not just talk about those under 30. We have long since forgotten.
Yeah,
but
we have a little history to at least when we do hear the truth to absorb it a little bit easier than these kids do. I mean, these kids, it's like they have no point of reference to soak up what you're trying to tell them.
I think all the founders would have agreed that you can't have democracy without having a particular character of the people.
Well, I think it was John Adams said a democracy will not work with anything other than religious people. I'm pretty sure that was him who said that.
By the way, let me mention another nonprofit organization, a quick plug here. Hillsdale College is an institution that provides free online courses in the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. You can take one or more classes if you want to brush up, get good college-level class for free. I don't think you get the credit for it, but you get the instructions. So there are a lot of ways you can brush up if you want to make sure you and your family are up to date on these things.
We need to take advantage of that. Mark, have we confused education with mere academics here in America? I know one of the problems we have when kids enroll at Shepherd's Hill is, you know, they're concerned about their behavior. That's the thing that got them here. And then all of a sudden, when behavior gets in order, the most important thing is that junior's on the dean's list.
That's right. And the problem is, when you look at college admissions these days, it's all about the numbers. GPA, your SAT or ACT scores. That's really, did you take enough of the core subjects over the years? Character, your ability to work ethic, to handle college level labor. No, those things don't really get recorded. And what I see is we're in an achievement culture,
right?
With you know, especially those ambitious students. When I found over the years at Emory, the loss of those sort of more free-floating, bookish types, those who were interested in ideas, if you mentioned a book in class that wasn't on the syllabus, they would go check it out. Now the prevailing attitude is, what do I got to do to get the grade and move on?
And then there's the stat that 80% of the kids in college are cheating to get the grades. And I think there's something to be said to open up the eyes and ears of parents in that respect as well. You know, you see these bumper stickers, proud, you know, parent of an honor student. But if 8 out of 10 kids are cheating to get the grades, you know, how do they merit putting the bumper sticker on there?
You know, one thing that added to that was the number of students who cheated to get the grades or helped their friends cheat to get the grades who really didn't see that as a problem.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that nuts?
No sense of shame.
The problem is getting caught. That's when the problem...
That's where you screwed up.
Yeah.
You got caught.
That's exactly right. No, that's the attitude. Why does well-rounded education need to offer a moral component?
Because we're moral creatures. And if we do not have moral instruction as part of education, then we're not becoming the society that educates people completely.
But now
we're educating them partly. And what we end up doing is we turn moral instruction, which is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Young people grow up, take moral instruction. Where are they going to get it? They're going to get it from Miley Cyrus.
That's right.
They're going to get it from celebrity websites. They're going to get it from their friends. That's where the moral instruction is going to come from. So it's going to happen. And so I tell students, you've got to take lessons in leadership, not from the clique, popular clique, the popular crowd in school. You need to take lessons from the Iliad and the Odyssey in leadership. You need to go to better places to find your examples of heroism and villainy as well. You need to see the results of immoral instruction shown clearly and vigorously instead of this softened, easy kind of relativism that prevails in a world in which we're all about therapy and everyone is good and let's not be judgmental unless you cross certain racial and sexual lines these days. That's the only place where we find moral instruction upheld rigidly.
Why do you think more parents don't make their kids read? And should they?
A lot of the parents themselves are just busy. Teaching your kids to love reading is very time-consuming.
Yeah.
You sit down. I have an 8-year-old son. I sit down. I read with him. I'm still reading to him. In fact, parents should read to their kids up till age 11, 12, 13. You gradually transfer the reading over to the child, him or herself. You need to keep reading with your child into those years.
Can you jumpstart an interest in them for them to do that?
Why not? If you find the right things.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean— But it takes time. You know, it's 8 o'clock at night. You're tired.
Right.
You got laundry to do. Especially if you're a single parent, it's almost impossible to spend all those hours planting the reading bug.
And then we know what gets that time. We know what gets that time, don't we? It's the digital technology and the social media. That's what gets that time when we're exhausted.
Well, we often will sit down in front of the TV to watch a show before bedtime whatever. But I will tell you. With our 5 kids, it's kind of funny. We've gone through some of the books multiple times because there's about a 10-year spread between our oldest and our youngest. But as the kids were younger and growing up, we would sit down at bedtime and read some of the older books that to me were favorite books as a child, like Rascal by Sterling North, or we read The Lion, the Witch, and the Whale, actually the whole Narnia series. And we'd read that at bedtimes, and it was better than a motion picture. Mm-hmm. And we all enjoyed it. My wife would come and sit in sometimes when I was reading, or she would read and I'd sit in. It was a lot of fun.
And it stirs their imagination. It gets those brain chemistry going for those critical, constructive, and creative thinking skills.
You'll find that the special effects are a whole lot better that you create in your brain than those that are created on the screen.
Yeah. Mark, what's a bibliophobe?
A bibliophobe is a kid who is in my class and gets the syllabus and sees a couple novels on there, more than 200 pages, and you see the face fall. and it's, oh, I don't want to read this. I don't even like novels. That's the bibliophobe. Someone who just, I don't like to read, I don't want to read, and I'm going to...
Can I just watch the video? Can I just watch this on TV? Yeah, would that be okay?
That's right.
Does that describe most kids today, you think?
Increasingly so. Mm-hmm. I would say that certainly the reading of some of the more serious literature that would describe. I mean, we had the Harry Potter phenomenon. That was a genuine cultural phenomenon, and these books were 800 pages long. I have some concerns about Harry Potter content. Mm-hmm. But it was great that kids were reading. But why did they read? They read the books because their friends read the books.
It wasn't because they had a love of reading.
No, because they haven't picked it up. No other phenomenon has come close. Mm-hmm. We haven't had another thing like Harry Potter since then.
Would Hunger Games come close?
I you know what? I don't think that many kids read the Hunger Games. I mean, remember, Harry Potter, the next version would come out. Barnes & Noble would open at midnight, mm-hmm. the day it was coming out, mm-hmm. and you would have hundreds of kids lined up around the block to get it, to be one of the first to get that book.
I don't think it was just a bit of them reading it because their peers were doing it. I mean, the books were written well for that age group, and I've not read the books, but I've talked to kids who have, and they just said it's really great reading. And these are from kids who weren't readers before.
I'm not as big a fan of the writing of.
Okay. Well, again, Mark is an English professor, so.
Well, I'm on the seventh one. We've got about 200 pages to go. I read 4,500 pages of Harry Potter to my son. And I actually find myself changing the words often just to make the sentences a little more elegant and also to skip some of the
ickier
parts, actually.
How do you feel about computers in math class?
Students need to learn how to do multiplication and long division by hand.
Is that why we can't get our proper change back at McDonald's?
just the addition and subtraction.
You have to have a special card to know how to tip the waitress at restaurants. That's incredible to me.
We don't even have numbers on the cash registers anymore. We have the product.
Yeah, the little icon, picture there.
So they don't have to do anything with numbers. But look, you find more and more kids going to college and ending up in remedial math courses, mm-hmm. because they can't do basic college math.
So. Unbelievable.
It's a totally separate conversation if you want to get into those who are fast-tracked through the education process because they are valuable as a musician or as an athlete or an actor. You know, they've got some other reason and the education system can even push them through. And then they're even graduating from college, still not knowing how to do the math or knowing how to write a complete sentence or a paper.
Hmm. Right. We're finding more and more ways to get students into college without having the basic literacy and numeracy. I'm very much in favor of a high school and junior high curriculum that includes all the arts.
Sure.
And music as well. You know, one thing is we've lost a lot of those.
Oh,
and
boy.
Music is a rigorous discipline. If you're in a group and you play the wrong note, everyone knows it.
They know there's absolutes in music, don't they?
They know there are absolutes. You better play it right. You can't be out of key.
That's right.
Sports, actually. We have competition. Why do people love sports? Because you've got winners and you have losers. And people are drawn. Mm-hmm.
And team building is very important, and that comes through in both of those.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
You mentioned this generation's lack of appreciation for the fine arts. There have been a couple of prominent names in the hip-hop and rap arenas who've recently spoken out about the industry's culpability for the dumbing down of kids today and the moral declension. Hmm. What should parents take from this?
Well, look, we know what has happened to popular culture in the last 50 years in the famous term defining deviancy downward. Hmm. And if you showed someone a TV show from today back in the 1950s, if you showed it in the 1950s, people would have said, what in the world is this?
Oh, yeah.
What am I looking at here?
That wouldn't have worked.
and you know, high culture was not this sort of snobbish, effete, elite kind of thing. I mean, in 1950, there were 165 million people in this country. Every weekend, 15 million people, one out of 11 in the United States, tuned in to the Metropolitan Opera's broadcast. Texaco sponsored this, and it was broadcast on radios all over the country. One in 11 people watched this. Cartoons were filled with classical music. You got your Mozart from Bugs Bunny.
But admittedly, there's only two stations. That was part of the problem.
Well, back in... When you tell students today, when I was your age, back in 1973,
plowing through the snow,
there were five TV stations in Washington, D.C., where I was living at the time. And they how could you live with it?
Right.
And if you turned on the TV back then, I actually looked this up once, in 1970 in Atlanta, there was only one TV show all day long that was about teenagers, and that was the Patty Duke Show.
Oh, yeah.
Which was she's a high school student. There were shows that appealed to teenagers like Gilligan's Island. There were no teenagers in Gilligan's Island. There were no teenagers in My Favorite Martian. There were little kids shows, and then there were grown-up shows. Mm-hmm. Teenagers who tuned in could have fun, but they were watching grown-ups. They weren't watching versions of themselves.
Well, the term teenager wasn't even in the dictionary until 1938.
There was no such thing as adolescence. Mm-hmm. What happened, and until the 20th century, what happened was this. In 1910, 90% of high school age Americans were not in high school. They were working.
In the fields.
They were in the fields. They were working in the shops. The girls were working in sewing circles, working in kitchens.
Doing adult stuff.
Doing adult stuff and under the direct guidance and command and example of adults.
Mentor, yeah.
Only when we started extending universal education through high school through the 1930s, by the 1950s, about 70% of them were in high school. Mm-hmm. And what do? We take them and we put them in a building for 8 hours a day for 185 days a year. And what we got was the natural thing. These little tribes formed. These little social groupings, a subculture, a society all their own. They started to have their own clothes, their own music, their own fashions. And that's when people started to say, I don't understand kids these days.
Yeah.
You know, you got movies like Rebel Without a Cause.
Right.
There was no social life for teenagers in 1920. It just didn't happen.
Mark and Trace, we do need to take a break, but Mark, when we come back, I want to ask you something along the same lines about Jesus as a teen acting very much like an adult and the implications of that. You're listening to Licensed to Parent, and we'll be right back.
Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org, helpmytroubledteen.org.
It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face to face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting LicensedToParent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at LicensedToParent.org. Welcome back to Licensed to Parent. Our host is Trace Embry of Shepherd's Hill Academy, and I'm Rich Rosel. And our guest once again today is Mark Bauerlein, author of the book The Dumbest Generation. And Mark, to borrow from Sherman and Mr. Peabody, let's take the Wayback Machine back about 2,000 years now and talk to us about how it is that Christ is walking with the crowds and his parents at age 12, and or isn't, rather, you know, his parents leave. And where's our 12-year-old son?
Well, where is
he was mature. He was 12 years old. He was, you know, he and others like him were already taking on adult roles.
David Farragut commanded a battleship at 12 years old. John Quincy Adams was the assistant to the ambassador to Russia at 14. Huh. The guy who invented Braille, he was a teenager. I mean, the list goes on.
He just didn't know it at the time.
He just didn't know it at the time.
Now we've got a case where we've got 35-year-olds who are teenagers.
40-year-olds.
They're playing video games. Yeah. The man-boy problem.
There's more women in the workforce than men. There are more women in college than men. You know, they call them Peter Pan males, guys that just don't want to grow up. You know, their greatest ambition in life is the next level of a video game. That's time they could be spent on preparing for their future.
You know, the examples, too, that they have, you know, the most popular show is ESPN Sports Center. Mm-hmm. It's actually the most popular show for our president. Mm. What is ESPN? It is a bunch of 45-year-old men acting like they're 17.
That's true.
They are juvenile. It is unwatchable for any self-respecting man.
I agree.
All the yucking it up.
I'm a sports fan.
I love football. I love watching college football. I don't like listening to all the hype and I stop watching when they score a touchdown because I can't take all the chest thumping and the juvenile celebration.
Do you think that some of our elected officials have gotten elected as the result of a naive and uninformed citizenry?
They are more and more doing what plays to the electorate. And what I find more and more that plays into this is the extension of politics everywhere and the loss of civic virtue.
Sure.
By civic virtue, I mean not that you don't have ambition and that you're not political, but there's a limit. And there's past that limit, you care about the good of your country more than the good of yourself. More than the good of your party, there is something else that everyone is a part of, and that you're not going to cross that line. You're not going to do something to benefit your party that's going to hurt your country. That's lost, as I see it. And again, I regard both parties. I think the Democratic Party is worse on this, but I find both parties guilty.
Sure. So, where do you see our country in the next 10 years, next 20 years.
I don't want to look.
Isn't that something?
I mean, look. Here's my concern that we'll get this generation growing up without having learned our civic traditions, having lost respect for religious liberty, religious conscience, and having vulgar taste in art and entertainment. Mm-hmm. They're going to be 40 years old. They will not have passed through high school and college exposed to the better creations of God and humanity. And so they are going to then pass on less and less of our blessings and our better selves to the next generation. The freedoms and the goods and the blessings that we have, we take for granted, not realizing how fragile they are.
Or where they came from. How they got here.
And it only takes one generation's ignorance to end.
Yeah, history has proven that. But the problem is we don't learn from history. History shows that we don't learn from history. Mark, we only have about 30 seconds left here. What one thing would you like to leave parents with today that would give them the greatest assurance that their kids aren't going to be part of the dumbest generation?
Spend 1 hour a day talking with your kids about grown-up things, and spend time also reading, listening to intelligent radio, intelligent television, intelligent culture. Do things to draw your children out of this web of youth culture and peer pressure that is only going to damage them when they grow up.
They don't have to be 24/7 entertained with their kind of entertainment.
Right. And you don't need to jump on them all the time.
Right.
I'm talking about 1 to 2 hours a day of your critical, intellectual, religious, and artistic engagement with your own children.
And that's going to be a difficult task for a lot of parents, I can tell you that.
It is. Our guest today has been Mark Bauerlein. Mark is a professor of English at Emory University in Atlanta. He is also the author of the book, The Dumbest Generation: How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. You'll find that book on Amazon.com or at thedumbestgeneration.com. And Mark, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. That was great.
Well, we do hope that you've enjoyed today's program and that you'll check out our website as well at licensedtoparent.org, where you can listen to other conversations that will equip you to be the kind of parent God designed you to be. You'll find those in the program archives section of the site, and you'll also discover our weekly blog, Insight for Today's Culture, and links to our one-minute parenting videos. By the way, if this program has been a blessing to you, I hope you'll take time to let your local station know and that you'll invite your friends to listen. And furthermore, we would invite you to consider becoming one of our ministry partners. The outreach that we do to teens in crisis here at Shepherd's Hill and the work that we're trying to do to equip parents here on the Licensed to Parent broadcast would not be possible were it not for the prayers and the financial support that we receive from folks just like you. You can make your tax-deductible donations securely on our website at licensedtoparent.org. That is all the time we have on today's broadcast. On behalf of Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rossel. Thanks for listening. Please be sure to join us again next time to renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else or something else will. God bless you. See you next time.